Last week, Michigan State University's College of Engineering announced the largest individual gift in its history, $10.7 million. Computer scientist John R. Koza, a University of Michigan graduate based in California, made the bequest. After he dies, the money will be used to establish two endowed chairs. These are faculty positions to be held by eminent scholars who will study and teach genetic programming. The bequest will go to MSU's Beacon Center for the Study of Evolution in Action. Here to tell us more about the gift, the Beacon Center, and genetic programming are two guests. Eric Goodman is director of the Beacon Center. Welcome, Eric.
Thank you, Mark.
And Professor Wolfgang Bonshoff is the Beacon Center's first endowed chair, also made possible by a previous gift from Mr. Koza for $2 million. Professor Bonshoff, welcome.
Thank you.
I want to ask both of you what you thought when you first heard about this bequest. Eric,
Well, the first time when John Koza called me, I was sitting in my office, and he said, I've been thinking about giving an endowed chair to the Beacon Center. And I was absolutely speechless. I mean, you know, I had chills, and it was amazing. And as we talked further, it made a lot of sense. He saw Beacon Center as the right place to put this kind of research and development activity. So we were just very happy to receive that.
Professor Bonshoff, what do you think? I mean, you're the first endowed chair in the department.
Yes, I'm the beneficiary of this gift, actually.
That's right.
And that's actually a dream come true for me because, in my career I had various positions, but this one is really dedicated to research in the area where I really like to be. And so that's an ideal position for me. And I felt very, very happy to be able to be part of this.
Eric Goodman, the Beacon Center's mission is to study evolution in action. Can you tell us more?
Yes, well, evolution in action, we mean, you know, we're not studying fossils and trying to figure out all of the origin of man necessarily. That's some of our folks are concerned with that. But we look at both biological evolution, what happened in the real world, and then we look at evolution in the computer. We evolve computer programs, and we use evolving what we call digital organisms or computer programs to learn about evolution going on in nature, and correspondingly, we take ideas from evolution in nature to make better representations of the evolutionary process in the computer that we use to actually solve engineering problems, to design new parts of cars or airplanes or new computer programs.
That is very, very interesting. When you and I spoke on Friday, you cited the real-world problems of bacteria that evolved to resist antibiotics. There was a report on NPR on this, by the way, earlier this morning. Is that evolution in action?
Absolutely. You know, both bacteria and viruses are constantly evolving, and that's one of the things that has made antibiotics become less and less effective. So we actually have microbes that are able to resist the antibiotics, almost all of the ones that we have. And by understanding the evolutionary process better, we hope we can provide guidelines for development of new antibiotics, whole new classes of antibiotics that will be much harder for bacteria to evolve resistance to.
Hmm. Professor Bonshoff, I know the Beacon Center is funding dozens of seed projects at any given time. Can you tell us one that you're working on right now?
Okay, this is about fitness landscapes, and fitness is a very important aspect of evolution where you have sort of a quality measure for how good an organism is in the environment, or in our case, how good a computer program behaves according to the specifications we have for that behavior. And we are examining fitness landscapes, that is the search space where you could look at different computer programs and how they behave and therefore what kind of fitness they have. And this is one of the a seed project that we have started in August this year.
Is this about durability? Is this about the ability to adapt? What?
Yes, it is about the ability to evolve, actually, and to find better solutions in the space of, in this case, programs.
I think this whole connection between the organic and the digital, I find absolutely fascinating.
Eric, so do we, Mark. It keeps us going every day.
Mr. Koza, who is apparently considered the father of genetic programming, his work connects to the Beacon Centers? How exactly?
Yeah, well, evolution in the computational domain started out with genetic algorithms, which were a form of evolutionary computation developed at the place where both John Koza and I graduated, got our PhDs in the early 1970s in the lab of Professor John Holland, who died, unfortunately, recently.
Where was that?
This was in Ann Arbor.
Okay.
After genetic algorithms were applied in many different situations, Koza had the idea of evolving programs in the computer rather than just evolving solutions to particular problems. You evolve a program that can solve a whole class of problems. And he came up with a representation for doing that that was very clever. And a lot of us have adopted that kind of representation. And now there are many other representations that are also part of genetic programming. For example, Dr. Bonsoff wrote not only the first textbook on genetic programming, but also a text on linear genetic programming, which is another variety of what Koza originally started.
What were you doing prior to coming to Michigan State, Wolfgang?
Okay, I was a professor at Memorial University in Canada, in Newfoundland, which is one of the provinces of Canada. And I was the chair of their Department of Computer Science.
Doing similar work to what you're doing now?
Doing similar work, but, you know, when you are in an administrative job, there's only so much time you have for your own research. Definitely not enough to actually make that kind of splash that I'd like to make here.
We're talking about the Beacon Center, part of Michigan State University's College of Engineering, and the $10.7 million bequest made to it by John Koza, considered the father of genetic programming. Eric Goodman, there's obviously been evolution in the natural world, but your work at Beacon Center, this digital evolution, I'm wondering if you could, I hesitate to go there because we've got a lot of smart people listening to the program, but I'm wondering if you could give us some kind of example of digital evolution.
Well, sure. It's interesting. If you think of a commercial computer program like a Word or an Excel or something like that that everybody uses, and from time to time there are bugs in those programs, with genetic programming, we've actually been able to evolve fixes for those bugs, the actual source code that fixes the problem, just by giving it examples of bad things that it did and then what it should have done, and it evolves the computer code to fix the problem, and it does it faster and less expensively than you could pay a human being to do it. And when the results of genetic programming are human competitive like that, we are really thrilled with it.
I know you know Mr. Koza well. He seems like a really interesting guy. Tell us a little more about him.
Well, he is indeed a very bright and interesting guy. Dr. Koza was the not only inventor of genetic programming, but the inventor of the scratch-off lottery ticket. And the state of Michigan, way back when, was one of his first customers. And so he worked very closely with the lottery commission here to put the whole Michigan State Lottery into effect. And for many years received royalties from that. And I think some of these proceeds that he's donating to the university
stems from the lottery. How
exactly, about from our own Michigan lottery. So that's very interesting. And he is also the father of a movement called the National Popular Vote, which would eliminate the effect of the Electoral College and elect the president by popular vote by making an agreement, a compact among the states that would say once enough states to control 270 electoral votes have joined the compact, then they pledge they will each cast all of their electoral votes for whoever wins the popular vote across the nation. And so it doesn't take a constitutional amendment. It can be done by this agreement between the states, which 61% of the way has been achieved already. In other words, 61% of 270 electoral votes, those states have already agreed to that compact.
Mm. Well, it sounds like he might get a few more supporters after what happened a month or so ago.
You know, I hope so.
Professor Bonshoff, as new discoveries are made in the field of genetic programming, what real-world impacts are they likely to have?
I would say the major impact to be expected in the next couple of years will be the automatic programming. So some kind of steps toward automatic programming where the computers are able to adapt their programs. For example, in that sense that if you have a machine that runs a program, that same program cannot run on a different machine, but the adaptation would allow that program then to run on the other machine. So you can run in heterogeneous, as it's called, heterogeneous environments. This is one example where you could use automatic rewriting of a program to get it working on a different machine.
But it's apt to impact all different kinds of fields. And any field that involves a computer,
correct,
could ultimately, yes, be impacted by discoveries,
yes,
in this.
Yes.
We talk about people being evolved, and it's meant as a compliment, typically. Do you consider evolution, typically, a positive force, or can it go wrong?
Well, you know, evolution, if you look at it statistically, has gone wrong much more often than it could possibly have gone right. In other words, there are a whole lot of things that have evolved throughout the history of the world that are no longer in existence. So certainly, evolution explores a lot of dead ends or blind alleys. And, of course, we consider ourselves as human beings to be very highly evolved, and I agree with that. I believe that we are, but we're not the final product of evolution. We will continue to evolve.
Evolution in action.
Absolutely.
It's happening as we speak. I guess maybe that's the difference between evolution and mutation, I think. People generally think of evolution as a positive force, or a lot of people do, but then there are mutations, I suppose.
Well, you know, evolution works via mutation, but you're exactly right, Mark. I mean, most mutations that happen to any organism cause it to be less fit, cause it to be worse than it was. But of course, what happens to the ones that are worse is eventually they die out, and it's only the ones where a mutation is helpful that survive. So mutation is an integral part of evolution, but you're exactly right. Most of them go wrong.
Well, can interrupting evolution be considered a good thing in some cases then? Interrupting the natural evolution of an organism?
Yeah, there are real world examples of that. For example, if you think of a microorganism that's being used to try and create some kind of fuel from sewage or waste or something like that, we would very much like to be able to inject a bunch of particular bacterium or yeast or whatever into a vat and have it cook and keep adding more stuff and taking more product out and have nothing change, no evolution. Unfortunately, that's not what happens. After you run it for a while, the organisms start evolving, and then they're doing what turns out for them to be best to do, not for us to be best to do.
Speaking of digital evolution, there is a doomsday scenario that we hear about occasionally, whereby computers or robots or some combination thereof evolve, in quotes, to eventually destroy civilization. Have either of you thought much about that? How much credence do you put into that discussion?
Well, it is certainly a legitimate discussion to look at the side effects of our technological developments, and this is certainly a question to be asked. I personally think that thinking about an enemy that we are creating an enemy here is perhaps a bit misguided. I think that there are certainly side effects which we have to guard for, but they're probably not sort of the enemy of us, more like things where we could, in the course of this type of further evolution of nature, become less important, because there are some, in this case, machines that would be able to develop intelligence of
Of its own.
Yes, yeah. Of their own, yes.
Is anyone studying that in a serious scholarly way?
I think it's starting to be studied. I would be hard-pressed to give a name right now, but there are definitely people thinking about that. And in general, in the artificial intelligence community, which we belong to in artificial evolution, in evolutionary computing algorithms, there's a lot of thought being started to sort of estimate the consequences of what we do and help guard and regulate maybe in the future.
Well, we're ending this on a rather grim note, but we'll remind everybody that it was good news that triggered the visit of our two guests here today. We've been talking about the Beacon Center, part of Michigan State University's College of Engineering, and the $10.7 million bequest made to it by John Koza, considered the father of genetic programming. We want to thank Eric Goodman, director of the Beacon Center, and Professor Wolfgang Bonshoff, the Beacon Center's first endowed chair. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you,
Mark. Thank you.